The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows.
Republic Broadcasting Network. To silence this is the National Intel Report. Unfortunately, it is not with John Stadtmiller. It is only with John of Talk with John. So Mondays and Saturdays, 3 to 5 Mountain, 4 to 6 Central. You can join me on my show. But I'm going to have I have a couple guests that are going to be joining me, and I will be introducing them in a minute. But it's an honor and a privilege to be back here again. Fill-in host, substitute hosting for John Stadtmiller. We've got some great hosts that do it. One of those is Steve Elkins that I think highly of. But we're also going to have someone join us that was a regular with John. So let me first, though, let me get this show off to a somewhat good start. Today is Friday, August 5th, 2022, and it is approximately 5:02 Central and 4:02 Mountain where I'm at.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, David, I'll be introducing you in just a moment.
Great.
Let me get to kind of how I start off my show is with a show prayer. No need to bow your head, close your eyes. It's just a prayer of my heart. I hope my show is a gift back to my forefathers, the founding fathers. May it be an acceptable token to our Father above. Then, the show mantra also is, my show mantra, where there is liberty, there is the Spirit of Christ. Where the Spirit of Christ is, there will be liberty. And the greater the Spirit of Christ, the greater liberty will be. Then, let me now get to my guests. First guest that I want to introduce is Roger Landry. Most of you are familiar with him. He has a show Sundays, I believe it's from noon to 1 Central. I believe it's 11 to noon Mountain, which is my time zone. And then also, so you know him well. You know him. You love him. He's the leader of TLB Talk, the Liberty Beacon, and does much good for America. Then I also want to introduce another guest for this hour and for the next 2 hours is David Pine. He's the Deputy Director, National Operations EMP Task Force on the National and Homeland Security. He's a former U.S. Army headquarters staff officer of over Russia and national security expert. He also has great knowledge in the Pacific Rim, China, Ukraine, and Roger has great knowledge in this area as well. Both of these gentlemen joined me for a conversation. I want to say it was about 2-3 months ago now. It was an awesome show. Roger joined us for, I believe, about half an hour, 45 minutes, and Roger was like, John, I'll do that anytime you can get them on. And I've been threatening both of them that I'd be getting them on here soon to do the National Intel Report, and we finally made it happen. It's on me, but thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's, the reason why I brought in both of these gentlemen, because I see them as experts. I don't need to sell Roger in any way, shape, or form, and I don't need to sell David. The bottom line is these guys have a ton of knowledge, a ton of experience, and David has congressmen go to him, and Roger not only was a weekly guest on for an hour every single week with John Stattmiller because he trusted him. John didn't bring on people he didn't trust and people he didn't believe in. Now, John, I've talked with John. I'll believe him. I'll bring on people that I don't trust and I don't believe in if they've got a good story to tell, and we'll sort out whether they're real or not. But John was really cautious on who he brought on his show, except for when he brought on a guy called Talk with John. He kind of lost it there. That was not wise. But the bottom line is both of these gentlemen have a very good understanding of what is going on in Russia, Ukraine, China, Taiwan, the Pacific Rim. And so let's get into it. I want to pose this. Here's a headline in Twitter, gentlemen. Right now, a headline that is up on Twitter that they're selling out to everybody is China announces sanctions against Nancy Pelosi following Taiwan's visit. I want your thoughts on, was it a good idea for Nancy Pelosi to go over? And I want to throw my thoughts out there first so you can say, John, you're a moron. You're an idiot, and let us inform our audience how smart we are. And well, please don't make me look too stupid. But the bottom line is, as a citizen of the United States, growing up, I'm now almost 50. We were the big dog. We were the big, as Roger likes to say, we were the Cowboys, and everybody paid attention to the Cowboys because they had the guns. They knew what to do. Now, 25 years ago, Newt Gingrich went over to Taiwan, and China didn't say a peep or at least do anything. Nancy Pelosi goes over now, though, and they start firing off missiles right after she was there. They fired a missile into the waters of Japan, not just Taiwan that they claim is theirs. Let's start with David, if you don't mind, and then we'll go to Roger.
Yeah, in answer to your question, Pelosi's visit was will likely be remembered as one of the greatest foreign policy blunders, unforced errors in U.S. history. It has the possibility of leading to a third world war, depending on how Biden reacts to incoming imminent Chinese aggression. I had been predicting a blockade, a Chinese blockade. We saw that go into action just yesterday, actually. The night before our time, that is something I predicted in a Saturday article I posted on my Substack account at dpyne2.substack.com, and it's something that Jeffrey R. Nyquist, who's a longtime Russia China expert, he had a Chinese source that was predicting that. So far, the plan that that was revealed to him has proceeded like clockwork. It is also reportedly going to include a Chinese invasion of a number of Pacific Island nations, mostly small and undefended or lightly defended. And how the Biden administration reacts to that, as well as China's air and naval blockade, will determine the fate of our country.
Roger, your thoughts.
Well, first off, it's good to talk with you again, David. And second off, one of the things you didn't mention is that I have 30 years working with the military-industrial complex, traveling the world, fixing things that go bang or things that find things that go bang. So whereas I don't have the depth of the political aspect of this that David would see, I do have a little bit of the technical aspect, actually quite a bit of it. And for the last 10 years, I have been studying the world and reporting on it on six global news websites. So what I see is a little bit different than what David says, but it complements it because David always has good things to say. What I'm going to say is there's two situations here that people need to understand. One is that, and anybody who argues this, there is enough information to back up what I'm about to say, that it's not just air. We basically have a compromised president. We have a president sitting in the White House right now who, via his son and his own actions, literally is compromised. And the three nations that compromise Joe Biden at this point are Ukraine, China, and Russia, but China being the biggest of the three. If Nancy Pelosi, who would have actually listened to Joe Bob, and I'm going to tell you something right now, I don't agree with 99.9% of what Joe Bob has to say, but if she had not gone, we may not be in this situation we're in right now. But why would Joe tell her not to go? Why would Joe back away from a lot of the sanctions that Trump put on China to try and run an equalizer for American businesses? Why would we be selling strategic oil reserves to a Chinese company that is basically run by the CCP and is a partner, or was a partner, of Hunter Biden? We are looking at a political mess here. And do I believe what David's saying? I believe that China is emboldened right now more than they have ever been, and Nancy Pelosi was an excuse for them to step up. I honestly believe that. And I honestly believe that there are dangerous waters ahead. My biggest concern is the guy sitting in the White House is by no means the guy we want sitting in the White House in a situation like this. This is the first compromised president, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I have ever known, and I'll be 68 in 2 weeks.
Okay, so I want to go a little big picture on this one. And then let's kind of hone down on what's going on. I think there, a lot of our audience has a good understanding, but let me look at it from this standpoint. I have never been a fan of being a policeman of the world. I'm not a big fan of us having army military bases, Air Force bases all over the world that we're paying for. We're paying for Germany's defense. We're paying for France's defense. We're paying for the defense of Saudi Arabia, for Israel, for every country and their dog almost that wants us to have an air base. My problem with that is we're spending a lot of money. And the other thing is, it's like Germany, the people of Germany, the people of a lot of these other countries have just seen us as the bad guy, the mean guy, and they've not been building up their own military. Hence, Australia doesn't have a great military fleet. No other Pacific country has a great military fleet. It's us, the Russians, and China when it comes to the Pacific fleets. Now, not even Japan. Now, part of it is sanctions, and we should have gotten rid of those.
I wouldn't count Japan out. I wouldn't count Japan out. Really, well, I wouldn't. They have capability.
I agree. Japan has a strong naval fleet.
Yeah.
One of the best in the world. The problem is they don't have any nuclear weapons, and ultimately that's going to be the thing that matters.
Yes. This See, David, this is why I like you.
So once again, you're slapping my hands, putting me in my place. Good job. But my point is, I think because of the way we've been over the last 30, 40, 50 years, we've been such a big man on the block that everybody else has relied on us. And as we pull back, it creates a huge power vacuum. Taiwan, I'm super concerned about, because just from the standpoint of here in America, Taiwan goes down, China takes, let's say that they don't fire a shot, Taiwan surrenders. What happens to all those factories that are sending out, the semiconductors? We're in big trouble.
Hold on. It goes a lot deeper than that, okay? Because you just hit the right nail on the head. What most people don't understand is how much of the production of China America counts on. How much does America get from China as far as technology, as far as produced goods, as far as that pretty little doll you buy for your daughter or your granddaughter that says made in China on the back of it? The amount of commerce between the United States and China, and the amount of dependency American businesses have on the manufacturing sector in China, is massive. Okay, do they hold sway? They absolutely do. And if you have somebody sitting in the White House, as I started this out by saying, who is in my eyes, in the eyes of a lot of other people, a compromised individual, it doesn't look good for us. It doesn't look good for Taiwan. And as David said, there are smaller nation states in that area that China will trample upon first and see. They'll test the waters. They'll stick their toe in and see if that's just cool enough for me to put my foot in and then jump in. So, David, you hit the nail right on the head again.
Then they start the leapfrog process, don't they? Of island hopping all the way up into the Philippines, to Australia, to take all of their precious metal resources of Australia. Yeah, of Australia, then they can go to Tonga. My favorite people, the Polynesians. There's not enough of them. If there was enough of them, maybe we could do something. But they go to the Polynesian Islands, then they go to Hawaii, then they can jump to the United States. And
you're in a nuclear war long before that. And David, yeah. I'd really like you to jump
in
on that. That
is what
you're
I
in a nuclear
know.
War long before that.
Yeah, China's plan is not that extensive. So this is kind of like a low-risk strategy, or as low-risk as you could get for their current ambitions. You know, by blockading Taiwan, they're not going to call it a blockade. They're going to call it a quarantine. Quarantine is not an act of war. A blockade is. So they're going to use the kind of language, and they're going to maybe refrain from kinetic attacks on Taiwan's main island. Maybe only cyber attacks, and they might even claim that it was just hackers that turned off the power and suddenly made Taiwan's defense ministry alert screens go blank. But they are, you know, that kind of strategy is, it's kind of like a slow boil strategy. Some Biden administration leaders, I think, have called it kind of a squeeze strategy. I think Senator Coons may have used that language. But it's a strategy that's in the PLA military doctrine, according to a DOD report that was issued on just last year that I included in my recent national interest articles at nationalinterest.org, as well as my Substack. And it's going to, they are going to, I don't think they're going to go to like the Philippines. I don't think they're going to invade any Filipino islands. They're not going to attack Australia or New Zealand. They very well may occupy the Shukaku Islands, which are defended and uninhabited. So that's probably going to be on their menu. And you mentioned Tonga. There's also Fiji, the Solomons, a whole bunch of island nations that I listed in my article as well. And the question is, again, we have, as Roger importantly brought up, we have a compromised president. We have a president who received an estimated $3+ million from China as kind of a kickback for Hunter Biden's contracts with them, which totaled $1.5 billion. So that being the case, that's both good and bad. It's really bad because we, as Roger mentioned, we have essentially a paid Chinese agent as our president. It might be good in the sense that he might be so reluctant to fight China that we may be able to avert a World War III, because my fear is that if we intervene directly in a Chinese invasion or occupation of Taiwan, Russia and North Korea will enter the fight, and we'll get hit by cyber EMP and nukes before we know it.
Oh, my God. And that's exactly why I really wanted you to jump in at that point. Because you kicked it off again. You hit that nail right on the head. You talked about North Korea. You talked about Russia. If you don't think that North Korea, who is basically a puppet, okay, of China, and you don't think that Russia, who isn't at this point in time willing to take anything from China, that China's willing to give, right now we are looking at a group of nations that are allied against who? They're allied against the cowboys of the world. There is, for the first time in almost a century, a chance to take the cowboys down. And if we get stupid enough to run in there at high speed, as Dave indicated, and start swinging the sword, it's not going to be good for us. It will end up in a nuclear war. Is Biden a good thing? I don't necessarily agree that I would call it a good thing. I would call it a rational thing, but I totally understand why you said it, David. Yes, it might be the rational thing to keep us from doing that, to keep us from being as, I don't know, as jumpy as we can be. Joe Bob will do everything he can to keep from a full frontal confrontation with China. I'm sure China has absolutely told him beyond a shadow of a doubt, you will do that. These two just had a phone conversation, okay? Jinping and Joe Bob had a phone conversation whereby he was threatened. Any other president in the history, the modern history of this country, would have slapped back so hard you can't even imagine. And poor Joe Bob just sat there and drooled on himself. I was so embarrassed to see that.
Are you sure he didn't wet his pants? Okay. I mean, what is
his pants?
Maybe he did wet his diaper and drool on himself. But the point here is we're looking at a situation right now where there's not a whole hell of a lot we can win at. There really isn't. They are our biggest supplier. They keep so many businesses in this country prosperous. China does. All right? They own a huge amount of American debt. They have the second largest modernized naval fleet on the planet. If you look at all of this together, and now you throw in North Korea, and now you throw in Russia, we are looking at something that may be unwinnable outside of starting to toss nukes. Then everybody loses. So, David, you hit the nail on the head again.
Okay, so let me let Amateur Hour jump in.
You're not Amateur Hour.
We can't win. My understanding is, from the great knowledge of David Payne and you, Roger, they have more nukes than we do. Especially
total.
When you say
they have a lot more nukes than we do.
China
yes.
and Russia together, along
yes.
with now North Korea.
Yes. And we've stripped away a lot of our nukes. Most people don't know that. We have a lot less than we used to. That's a fact.
Yeah, we have 94% less and 84% less strategic warheads that are operational since the end of the Cold War. So we're in a world of hurt. China's, they're growing their nuclear force by at least triple, probably quadruple, to the realm of nearly three times as many nukes, strategic nuclear warheads that we do. Russia has around twice as many nuclear warheads as we do. They might have a lot more than that because they have a nuclear arsenal that's capable of carrying 7,500 strategic nuclear warheads as opposed to our 1,500. I don't think they have that many yet, but they easily could. I mean, China's got 3,000 miles of their underground Great Wall, you know, these deep tunnels in which they're hiding, they're believed to be hiding, a large quantity of nuclear road mobile ICBMs. So they, you know, between those and the 350 new DF-41, you know, 10 warhead ICBMs silos that they're constructing, we're going to be completely overmatched in the nuclear area. And that's not just their strategic level, but even more so in the theater level, where, you know, they have hundreds of tactical nuclear warheads in the area. We may have at most 8 to 16.
Did you say 800 to 1,600?
I'm talking about tactical nuclear warheads. We only have between 150 and 200 estimated, nearly all of which are in Europe. President Trump did design a new tactical nuclear warhead for use on our Trident II SLBMs. So we have between 8 and 32 of those estimated. So assuming that half of those are in the Pacific because you know, we have two deployed Ohio nuclear missile submarines at any time in the Pacific and another two in the Atlantic. Then we could have, you know, that's where that estimate comes from.
Okay, but you need to stop before you say, and I apologize, you're the host, but let me say one more thing to cap off what David just said. You're talking about at least 10 times as many nuclear warheads as we need to literally shut down humanity. The United States has overkill, and we probably have the lowest number of those three, not probably, we do, the lowest number of those nations on the planet. We have enough to end humanity. If a nuclear war starts and the buttons start to get pushed, bye-bye humanity. The only way a nuclear war can actually be survivable is if it is theater nukes. Theater nukes whereby I launch something, it goes 300 miles, it's got a 10 kiloton head, not a 5, a 10, or a 100 megaton warhead, a 5 or a 10 kiloton warhead, so that it takes out a city, it takes out a fort, it takes out whatever, okay? Those are not going to affect the United States because we sit a long way from these people. So the only thing they're going to do to hit us is going to have to be long-range ICBMs. We start tossing them, and I'm talking about Russia, China, and not so much North Korea. They don't have a whole lot yet, but yeah, they're cracking the safe on that. But if the three nations, the three big dogs, start launching these things, we're talking about global winter. We're talking about the end of humanity. Not a joke as we know it, the end of humanity. This is what we're on the precipice of. Unless it is a totally theater nuclear warhead launch, as I said, small kiloton warheads, not megaton warheads, it's not survivable for any of us. It isn't. And we know that. It's called MAD, mutually assured destruction.
So how do we make sure that we don't get to that next step of nuclear missiles launched
Let me first respond to Roger. It's the first thing he said that I've disagreed with this whole conversation. He's been dead on right, everything else he said. But the one thing I would like to take issue with is I do not believe in the theory of nuclear winter. There's evidence that might have been a KGB narrative to try to help the anti-nuke campaign, nuclear freeze campaign of the Cold War. A nuclear war, a full-scale nuclear war would not destroy humanity. It would likely destroy all the nations that were targeted, but it would not destroy humanity. We know that. And another very important thing that I wanted to address are a couple of recent revelations, one of which is my former boss, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, Frank Gaffney, revealed just a few days ago that his sources are telling him that the Russians have deployed nuclear missile submarines along, just off the shore of our East Coast. They've also deployed at least one of them in the Chesapeake Bay into firing positions where they could take out Washington, D.C. in about 3 to 4 minutes. President Putin has threatened to do that in the past, even before Ukraine was invaded. He said that, the Zircon hypersonic missile, I think, is the one he was referring to, could take out D.C. before Biden could even get on Air Force One, let alone launch a retaliatory strike. Yeah. So that's a dagger pointed at our throat. It's just we're in a very scary situation. One other thing I wanted to mention, I just remembered again. The FBI recently revealed in a CNN article that I think it's pronounced Huawei. It's a Chinese telecommunications firm that was kind of banned and blocked by President Trump. But then
Yahweh.
So Yahweh owns some cell towers right by the Capitol, D.C., that reportedly have the ability to disrupt our strategic nuclear communications. So if Biden were in D.C., and if he were to order a nuclear retaliatory strike, they might not even launch.
Okay. We'll get to Roger's answer on the other side of this break.
Around the clouds, what goes up must come down.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Public Broadcasting, this is the National Intel Report. I am your host, John, of Talk with John, Saturdays from 3 to 5 Mountain, 4 to 6 Central. You can join me typically. And also, I have Roger Landry from here on the network. His show is from my time, 11 to 1 Mountain and noon to 1 Central. And then we also have David Pine joining me as well. So, David had just kind of made a few statements along the lines of capabilities of Taiwan, what might happen with if there's nuclear launch. Roger, do you want to have any follow-up?
I sure do. First off, I may have used the wrong explanation or the wrong words when I said a nuclear winter, because I don't think you're going to throw enough stuff up into the atmosphere to block the sun out. What I'm more talking about is when you have this much, okay, nuclear fallout, which you will kick a lot of dust into the upper atmosphere, and this will be highly radioactive. And due to the air currents, it will travel all around the planet. And if we're talking about a massive nuclear war, we're talking about, especially in the northern hemisphere, not so much in the southern hemisphere, you will see a massive spread of radiation across the planet. So, David, you're absolutely right. Nuclear winter isn't really applicable here, but then why am I surprised that you know what you're talking about? The next thing here is, let's talk about Nancy Pelosi for a second. Because, look, Nancy Pelosi is somebody who has been hanging around Washington, D.C. for longer than most people listening to the show have been alive. Anybody who believes that she doesn't have something to gain out of all of this, she does. And what does she have to gain? Look, this is there anybody here who thinks after her husband's, I don't know, bout with the law and the fact that the House is more than likely going to be lost to the Republicans and maybe even the Senate come 2022 election midterms, Nancy Pelosi wants to go out with a blaze of glory. She wants a badge of courage. She wants a point of recognition. She could have done what she was told, but she knows how many people hate Joe Biden. She knows how unpopular he is. He's the most unpopular president in modern history. If she can go out bucking him and looking to be the brave woman who overstepped the president and flipped the bird to the guy who's running China, this is the way Nancy Pelosi is going to go out. This has been her entire career. She has based her entire career on being a loudmouth woman who half the time doesn't know what she's saying but won't let anybody fight back.
David, your thoughts?
So I think my wife said it best. She told me she viewed Pelosi's visit to Taiwan as an Archduke moment. What she means by an Archduke moment, I'm sure you yes. and Roger know what that's in reference to. It's in reference to Archduke Franz Ferdinand's assassination that sparked World War I, a war that killed 20 million people not 5 weeks later. So we're kind of on that timeline. We're on a timeline, you know, in World War I, that wasn't inevitable. There were many opportunities. The Kaiser himself, there were four times in which he tried to stop things from accelerating into a war that Germany didn't want, but felt they had to fight because they were surrounded and Russia was mobilizing with this huge colossus on their eastern frontier. So we're not nearly in the bad position of Imperial Germany in August 1914. We don't have an enemy that really wants to fight or destroy us right now. President Xi, in his conversation with Biden, was very clear. He doesn't want the U.S. to react militarily. And not only that, he hopes to continue trade and business as usual. He wants, you know, China is on their, this is what I call their plan A. Their plan is to establish economic hegemony over the entire world. And in doing so, they're gradually transforming not just smaller countries, but the U.S. economy as well into a colonial economy in which we export food and raw materials, you know, food and oil, as Biden has done, to China. And they then use those raw materials to produce manufacturing goods and high-tech goods for us to use. But they want to have a monopoly on all of these strategic materials so yes. they can blackmail our leaders and other countries as well as the U.S. to do their bidding. But they don't want a war. They are going to have a war over Taiwan if Taiwan fights back, but they don't want a war, a great power, a nuclear war, because that entails a level of risk. Even though they believe that they would clearly win such a war, there would be major costs for them, even if a small number of U.S. nukes were to get through their missile defenses.
Oh my God! Yes. Absolutely right. They don't want a war. They don't want a war because they have a plan, and David hit the nail right on the head again. They have a plan which has been in the works in this country for several generations. Each year, they gain a little bit bigger foothold in America. Look at how much land China owns. Look at the fact that China is buying farmland right next to, guess what, U.S. military bases. Look at the fact that how many college professors are on the hook monetarily to Chinese companies. Look at Hunter Biden and his association with companies in China that have direct ties to the CCP, and the big guys getting 10%. if you listen to what David says, he hit the nail right on the head. They already have a foothold. They have a foothold that's big enough that they feel at this point, especially with compromised Joe in the White House, they can get away with a few threats here and there. What they don't want to do is destroy all the plans they've been working on for at least three decades. David, you hit the nail right on the head again. God, I like talking with you.
So how do we safely back down?
So I'm in the process of writing an article on the very subject, which I hope to be published next week in the National Interest. It entails a strategy in which we do not respond militarily. Unfortunately, you know, for good or bad, our window of reinforcing Taiwan militarily with arms is likely over, because the Chinese and air and naval blockade is likely to continue beyond this 4-day military exercise, which expires on Sunday. And it's going to produce Taiwan's surrender. And the only question is how fast. The only, Roger said, probably the only thing we could do to prevent that would be a U.S. nuclear escalation. But if we respond with nuclear weapons, then Russia and China and North Korea are going to hit us with everything they have, not just in terms of our Pacific military bases, air and naval bases, and of course our army troops in Okinawa and South Korea, but in terms of hitting the U.S. as well. So, you know, as I mentioned, their modes of attack are many. They have, they could take out our country with purely cyber. Russia's cyber capabilities are perhaps the best in the world. I attended the Stewart Security Summit, at which Congressman Stewart, who I think is the ranking member or soon to be ranking member on the Intel Committee, House Intel Committee, he said that Russia had the best cyber capabilities in the world. And he was stunned, as I was, and I'm sure Roger was as well, that Russia didn't use that against Ukraine, because they could have used that alone to get Ukraine to capitulate within, you know, several weeks. At least, and he theorized that the reason they didn't is they didn't want to tip their hand, because if they did, we might be able to establish, you know, the cyber defenses we need against, you know, that mode of attack. He's also got EMP weapons. I'm the deputy director of national operations for the EMP task force at the national level, and the electromagnetic pulse threat with super EMP weapons. Even one of those from Russia, China, or North Korea would be, if exploded in the center of the U.S. at a high enough altitude, could take out the entire continental U.S. Electrical power grid. And that would shut down our food, water, you know, no running water, no food distribution system, no transportation, no communications, no internet. Business would come to a halt, you know, no emergency services, no, you know, law enforcement. Hospitals would shut down, no fire. I mean, it would be an absolute disaster. The American people would just, you know, focus on trying to get as much, you know, defend their families from gang warfare and struggle to get to, you know, not to starve in place. So those are methods of attack, other than nuclear weapons, that our enemies could use to destroy us. And the scary part is North Korea is known to have, or believed to have, two super EMP satellites that they could detonate without any warning. They come out over in orbit over our south, you know, the southern U.S., where we have the least amount of early warning detection systems. So, you know, if we piss
over
off
the southern Korea, US, or
if they have Chinese authorization, because they won't do anything without China, they could end our nation in an instant.
What
is that,
I
the
would
southern
like,
U.S. or over the South Pole?
Over the United States. Okay. Well, it orbits, and yeah. The orbits is it circles the Earth. It comes, you know, a lot of, I mean, satellites have different orbits, of course, but this one orbits from the south to the north.
Yep.
Okay.
And look, let's talk. First off, we do have hardened silos, all right? So if you have an EMP pulse that does that much massive damage to the United States, that in itself, I'm sure, would be the trigger for launching anything we have in hardened silos. That would be it, okay? And that would be a massive retaliation that, again, would cause massive damage to the planet. But I want to take that one step further because David keeps bringing up brilliant points, all right? If you stop and look, China has spent a lot of time and effort hardening their grid. Russia has taken a lot of time and effort hardening their grid.
Well, so is the United States. In fact,
no, they have not.
No, we haven't.
The United States lags so far behind China and Russia. They have done everything they can to avoid it. If we were to receive an EMP pulse, as David said, we would lose a massive majority of, unless you have a vehicle that's from the 1950s, which doesn't have chips in it, it ain't going to run. And let's take that all the way through everything else. You do the same thing over Russia, you might knock out 20 to 25%. You do the same thing over China, you might knock out 20 to 25%. You do it over the United States, you knock out 75 to 90%. We have not taken the money or the effort to harden our grid. Tell me why.
Because it probably costs like $1 trillion, right, David?
No, it costs $30 billion. So we've our executive director, Dr. Peter Pry, has estimated $2 to $4 billion. But realistic, I mean, for that's kind of like for the lowest level of protection. But for a fully protected U.S. electrical grid, the cost would be about, we estimate, about $96 per person, per citizen, which amounts to $30 billion, which is a drop in the bucket. You know, we're passing a defense budget of $850 billion. And, you know, even $30 billion of the infrastructure bill, for example, which is $1.5 trillion, we could have easily done that. Now, the problem is, even if we pass that bill this year, it would take probably 2 to 5 years minimum to get it done. So we're way behind the power curve. And that's why we have got to avoid a great power nuclear war, third world war with Russia and China, because we won't win. You know, our defeat is virtually guaranteed. And there's no reason to fight because Russia and China, literally, they don't want to have a war with us. But their plan B is to destroy us and wipe us off the face of the planet as a country. They wouldn't, you know, with the EMP attack or a nuclear attack, the second order effects could kill 50 to 90% of the U.S. population. So that is a huge concern. And that should be the vital national security interest of every U.S. politician. Shouldn't be Ukraine. It shouldn't be Taiwan. It should be the vital national security interests of the United States in advancing and those, and foremost of which, I believe, is to preserve, protect, and defend the United States of America and its citizens from dying.
Okay, so now there's these transformers we got to rely on, right? That's one of the main things to go down. Now, aren't those starting to be made here in the United States? Aren't like 100% of them made here? And we've got to have like months worth of backup, right?
No, we have estimated 3 to 4% of German built large transformers in reserve, and 300 of our largest transformers are Chinese built. Yes. Taiwan also has Chinese built. Transformers in their system, which is why I believe they had a power outage that affected, I think, 20 to 25% of Taiwan, because these Chinese transformers have backdoors, we believe, that could essentially, without even any notice of it wouldn't even be a cyber attack. It would essentially just be that, I mean, and technically it would be, but all it would be is them kind of flipping a switch and sending signals, false signals and readouts that would cause the transformer to fail, you know, and to cause the rest of the power system to fail as well.
I got to jump in here because I've got less than 10 minutes to go and then I've got to go. And again, David makes beautiful points. He makes absolutely phenomenal points. Nobody wants a nuclear war. We don't want a nuclear war simply because it's probably something we're going to end up by being on the very, very bad end of. China doesn't want a nuclear war, neither does Russia. Why? Because, as David said, even if some of our, and they will, some of our warheads do sneak through, there is going to be a massive amount of damage, not to the level you'll see in the United States, but in both China and Russia. And they would rather not have this happen. They have the mechanisms in place, and they are strengthening the mechanisms in place to do economically and politically what a war would do. And this is where they would tend to focus. They don't want a nuclear war. They do not want a massive military war that's going to drain the budgets of every country. What they would much rather see is the United States acquiescing, because all of our business people are saying, you better stop that. I can't do business if you keep doing that. And this is what they're working towards. Have I got that wrong, David?
No, not at all. Really, the choice is pretty binary, in my opinion. We have one choice: is we confront China militarily as they squeeze Taiwan and possibly invade and occupy Taiwan, and we spark a clash, naval or clash and whatnot, in which U.S. military strategy is essentially to use conventional air and missile strikes against Chinese targets, such as ports and missile sites and air bases and communication hubs and headquarters, and expect that China's not going to throw nukes at us when we're literally attacking nuclear capable forces at their air bases and their missile bases. So that's guaranteed nuclear war, even if Russia and North Korea were to join the fight, which they absolutely would. North Korea would invade South Korea. Russia and China reportedly have plans to jointly invade Japan, Alaska, and Hawaii. So that's a problem. And then the other choice is we can stay out of this fight. We can say, okay, this is our red line. This is basically what I'm going to write in my article. Our red line is you do not attack any inhabited territory of our allies, treaty allies, which are Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and South Korea, and you don't mess with our territory, and then we'll only limit our response to economic, like a massive almost like a correction to massive economic and trade sanctions designed to free us from our dependence on China. Now, of course, they would the impact of that would be massive. We might even go through a depression, but we come out of it stronger because, World War II, if we had been cut off and blockaded on both sides of our coast and Mexico and Canada joined the blockade, we would have had no problems because we could produce all of our own food, every manufacturing item, every weapon system we needed domestically. And today most of our advanced weapon systems we can't produce without Chinese rare earths and Taiwanese semiconductors.
And if you stop to consider everything else that this guy has just said, we are so dependent on other nations to do anything in this country. And this was one of the biggest issues Trump had, especially with China. And what he tried to do was to reverse it to the point where we brought manufacturing back to the United States. Why? Because it was a security issue in his eyes. It damn right well is a security issue. We need to have those manufacturing processes home-based. And until we do, we are asking to be told what to do.
Well, the I hate to say this, but everything in this world runs on those semiconductors. Everything runs on that. And
U.S. produced semiconductors. There are, and supposedly with this new bill, they're trying to subsidize a massive increase of that. But right now, you're right.
That's 2 to 3 years away. And my understanding is 90% of semiconductors are made in Taiwan, and somewhere
pretty close.
And the next biggest bunch of the. Okay, let me rephrase that. 90% of the top tech semiconductors are
advanced semiconductors
in Taiwan.
Yes. Advanced, yes.
And then the next biggest percentage is South Korea. Then I think it's still in China. I don't know that it's the United States, but
no,
we don't have a lot.
Sorry, I think you asked a question, John, and that was what happens if our semiconductor supply chain gets cut off either through a Taiwanese blockade or a Chinese takeover of the island. And the answer is when the Chinese take over the island, assuming we don't have a huge sense of hostilities with them, I mean, hopefully they would just sell them as almost as a monopoly. Of course, there is a risk if we were to pursue the strategy that I'm advocating with massive economic and trade sanctions, mainly just trade sanctions, essentially, that they would, high tariffs is what I'm advocating, then they would retaliate by, you know, refusing to sell those to us. But, I mean, they really have a reason to sell more stuff to us, because that's how we become more dependent on them.
And yeah, puts them back into the arms of Russia also gives them, I believe China's biggest producers of food was the United States. Buying up all our
Yeah. And if you stop to consider that everything we're talking about right now didn't start yesterday. All of this has been on the drawing board. All of this has been on the planning board. There are those who have been pushing the world directly into the actions we see going on around us today. Anybody who believes that any of this, and I've got to go in about 3 minutes, anybody who believes that what we're looking at today started yesterday is a moron. This is not an oops. This is a plan.
Kissinger, George Soros, and the like.
This is global we're bearing governance. The fruits of the Nixon, Reagan, Kissinger strategy to build up China against the Soviet Union, and we never stopped. The Soviet Union collapsed over 3 decades ago. We kept providing them with dual use military technology and built them up with into the most massive military power that we've seen since the Soviet Union, with trillions of dollars in U.S. trade dollars. So it's a huge debacle and really avoidable error. If we hadn't pursued that strategy, I think China's GDP would be about one third of where it is today, and its military threat would be as well.
Okay, I want to throw this out there before Roger needs to go. I think China, we know exactly what they're thinking, because their largest aircraft carrier is called what?
Fujian.
And what is that named after, like, one of their leaders, or is that named after, what is that named after?
The province facing Taiwan, the Chinese province.
That's 81 miles right there.
You think they might be telegraphing something?
You think?
Absolutely.
Their aircraft carriers aren't that good. Their military isn't all that good. There's just a lot of it. It is their ability to put a whole lot in your face. Because if you compare their weapon systems to our weapon systems, they really don't meet the snuff. They're not up to snuff. But are they good enough? Yes. If I throw one really, really good tank at you, it's going to hurt you. If I throw 50 halfway decent tanks at you, it's going to destroy you. And this is what we're looking at with China. It's numbers, because their technology in their military and the people who serve in their military are not what I would call frontline.
All right. Roger, thank you for joining us. David and I are going to be back after the top of the hour break.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Roger.
Thanks, Roger.
I appreciate you being, brother.
Thank you, John. Bye.
Take all our money and send it abroad. We must take America back. We need prayer in the schools and more things made in USA. It's the least we can do for the red, white, and blue. We must take America back. We must take America back.
Boy Who Cried Wolf said, "What?" I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. The Biden administration has declared monkeypox a public health emergency. Yes, 5 children and a pregnant woman have monkeypox, but 98% of cases are men who have sex with men, and only 5 people in the world have died from the disease. But all of that is beside my point. By declaring a public health emergency, federal money, your tax dollars, is now up for grabs again. We are a nation that is supposed to be essentially 50 sovereign states. The federal government declaring an emergency every time you turn on the news erodes that sovereignty. Federal money, your tax dollars, have become nothing more than a carrot dangled in front of the state's budget committees. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.